from KUT and KUTX Studios.
This is you.
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the first full weekend of November 2020. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. Election results in Central Texas.
These are changes that will be with us for generation after generation.
The Texas blue wave that never materialized.
That theory of the case that Democrats had turned out to be not true.
And public fridges in Austin with free food.
They didn't only just help my family put food on the table, but other people too.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. You know there was an election, and you know which races get the most attention in the overall media landscape, but local races in a lot of ways are going to have more immediate effect on people's lives. Among them, in Austin, Proposition A. It easily won. It's a plan to help pay for a major transit expansion in the region. KUT's Samuel King reports the plan enjoyed wide support.
Prop A raises property taxes in Austin to help fund the $7 billion Project Connect transit plan. It will bring three new train lines, new limited-stop buses, as well as park and rides to the transit system, among other improvements. A new downtown transit tunnel will also be built. Advocates said the difference between this transit vote and ones that failed in the past was community engagement. Cab Metro Board Chair Wade Cooper says voters have taken a transformational step.
And these are changes that will be with us for generation after generation. We'll be looking back, our kids and our children's children 100 years from now, we'll be looking back and saying this really was a big moment in Austin history. And so we ask you to hold us accountable, to be engaged as we go forward.
Capital Metro anticipates federal funding will help finance some of the transit improvements. Upgrades to the existing Metro Rail Red Line and the new Metro Rapid Bus Lines are first on the agenda. The rest of the initial plan would be built out over the next 5 to 10 years. Samuel King, KUT News.
Austin voters overwhelmingly approved Proposition B, which would fund infrastructure improvements. The ballot measure allows the city to borrow $460 million for things like new sidewalks, new bikeways, street repair, stuff like that. City officials and the people supporting it saw it as complementary to Project Connect, which Sam was just reporting on, because they say it helps people have better connections to the actual transit stops. The plan includes millions of dollars to enhance transit access and for the city's Vision Zero effort. That's what they call their plan to reduce traffic and pedestrian fatalities. Now, two Austin City Council races in West Austin will be heading to a runoff election in December. These are races where no single candidate got more than 50% of the vote, so there's an automatic runoff between the top two candidates. Now, as KUT's Audrey McGlinchey tells us, challengers to these incumbents have been focusing on a common issue.
The Austin City Council's vote in August to cut millions from the police budget played heavily into the race for Districts 6 and 10. In District 6 in far northwest Austin, Councilmember Jimmy Flanagan finished with 40% of the vote. In a runoff election, he'll face Mackenzie Kelly, who promised to restore funding to the police budget if elected. Here's Kelly during a City Council candidate forum this fall.
Public safety should be paramount. We cannot claim fiscal responsibility at the risk of public safety. We need to support our officers and make meaningful police reform, but we cannot defund our police department without giving them the proper resources in order to do their jobs.
Meanwhile, Councilmember Allison Alter of District 10 led with 34% of the votes, but not enough to outright win it. She'll face Jennifer Verdin in a runoff election. Verdin also ran on a campaign of restoring money to Austin police. The runoff election is December 15th. Audrey McGlinchey, KUT News.
All Democrats running for Texas House District seats representing Central Texas won their races. So House District 47 incumbent Vicki Goodwin defeated Republican Justin Berry by about 1 percentage point. Incumbent Donna Howard will continue representing House District 48. That includes South and West Austin. She won with more than 70% of the votes against Republican Bill Schreiber. Gina Hinojosa, who's serving as the incumbent for House District 49, brought in nearly 80% of all votes, winning against her two challengers, Republican Charles Allen Meyer and Libertarian Kenneth Moore. The incumbent for House District 50, Celia Israel, will stay in office. She got 68.7% of the votes against Republican Larry De La Rose. And House District 51, which covers a large portion of Southeast Austin, that will also be represented by a Democrat, the incumbent Eddie Rodriguez. He brought in 82% of the vote against Republican Robert Reynolds. Democratic candidates also swept countywide races in Travis County this election, which is not really a big surprise because virtually every public office in Travis County is held by a Democrat, except for one, which used to be Precinct 3 in the Travis County Commissioner's Court. Well, that is now no longer controlled by a Republican. Gerald Doherty retired. He was the Republican. And now Ann Howard won that seat. She is a Democrat. There will be four new members of the Austin Independent School Board in January. The Board of Trustees makes key decisions about the largest school district in Central Texas. These positions, by the way, these school board positions are unpaid. They're volunteer positions. But as of today, we only know who two of the four new members will be. Because, as KUT's Claire McInerney tells us, the other two will be decided in a runoff election.
Kevin Foster and Ofelia Zapata won a majority of votes and will join the school board. Foster ran unopposed and will represent schools in North Austin. Zapata will represent schools in East and Southeast Austin. Two other races will go to a runoff election. Lynn Boswell and Jennifer Littlefield are the finalists for the District 5 spot, which covers Central and West Austin. The at-large position, which represents the entire school district, is down to Leticia Caballero and Noelita Lugo. Runoff election day is December 15th. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
Democrats and many in the media were expecting this election to yield a blue wave. Democratic Party support washing over the country, sweeping out Republicans from sea to sea to sea. Yet again, of course, efforts to predict the outcome of elections failed. So what happened here? Well, KUT's Trey Schar had a conversation about it with KUT's Ashley Lopez.
There are several factors here. How do you see it as the dust settles?
Well, it looks like that theory of the case that Democrats had about how they could possibly make some gains and possibly win the majority in the Texas House turned out to be not true. And that theory of the case was that in the suburbs, you know, areas where Beto O'Rourke did really well in 2018, and that's that U.S. Senate race that Democrats lost by a narrow margin, but lost nonetheless, you know, Democrats thought they could replicate that and build on those gains in 2018. But it looks like, you know, now that it's 2020 and there was, as expected, higher turnout than usual, it wasn't enough to make Texas more competitive in the Texas House for Democrats.
And one of the more significant implications of this is the once-a-decade redrawing of political district boundaries next year.
Yeah. Democrats were hoping to have a seat at the table for that. If they had power in at least one chamber, they would have had a bigger say in what political maps look like. It's important for listeners to know that the U.S. Supreme Court has said time and time again that they find no issue constitutionally with parties drawing maps to give themselves a partisan advantage in maps.
Right.
So, you know, that's a big reason why time and time again, Republicans in the past couple decades have been able to draw maps that favor their party without much standing in the way of that. So the hope was for Democrats that, well, you know, there's no laws in place to make sure we get a fair shot when political maps are drawn. So at least if we have some say in the process, it would turn out better for us. But I think that hope has been pretty much squandered.
Well, Central Texas Democrats in the Texas House who flipped their districts in 2018 held on to their seats this time, if narrowly in some cases. What is the takeaway from that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It seems like the incumbent in most of the races I'm looking at the seats that flipped in 2018 as well as the seats that were being targeted this year. It seems like incumbents won across the board, which means that, you know, 2018 was probably a better snapshot of what Texas Democrats could gain in like a good scenario. Again, that Beto O'Rourke race got a lot of money and attention. And also, I mean, it's hard to forget, but during the key parts of this election, there was a pandemic and Democrats did not do the same kind of knocking on doors and ground game that was done during 2018. So I'm kind of careful to mention, to say that there's anything huge to draw from this in terms of like, this is the best Democrats can do. But 2018 is a good snapshot of what Democrats can do when there's a lot of money and attention and groundwork done during an election. So, but it seems like building upon that, the theory that you could build upon that and get even more gains in a bigger election, like a presidential election, we don't have enough evidence of that yet, at least according to this last election.
And after the gains by Democrats ahead of the last legislative session, there was a little less red meat from the Republican leadership. With the balance about the same for the next session, what might we expect from that?
I mean, we'll see. You know, a lot of that was predicated on the fear of 2020, right? Was that Republicans were also a little scared that 2018 was setting up even more gains for 2020. So now that Republicans can see a very favorable map for themselves, even in a big turnout election like this, in a very competitive election, at least that's what the polls were telling us, then maybe they don't see the need to compromise as much or meet Democrats in the middle as much. But we'll see. I mean, I think we're still getting more election results, so we don't have a good picture of what the exact margins are. But I would imagine if all these seats are within a couple of points at the end of the day, that would mean something different than if the incumbents win, the Republican incumbents in these seats that Democrats were targeting win in a blowout.
Just a couple months away. Yeah. KUT's Ashley Lopez. Thanks, Ashley.
Thank you.
Austin Public Health says it is seeing a surge in active coronavirus cases. As KUT's Andrew Weber tells us, most of those cases are among younger people.
Active COVID-19 cases in Austin have hit their highest levels since August, a rise that health officials have largely pinned on 20 to 39-year-olds. Austin Public Health now says more than half of its positive tests in the five-county area are among folks within that age range, and it's urging people who may have partied over the Halloween weekend to go get coronavirus tests. APH said as of Wednesday, there were 1,034 active COVID cases in the Austin area, the most since August 15th. The call-out comes ahead of expected gatherings around the holiday season, prospect which has been a concern for public health officials. Last week, UT Austin's COVID projections for Austin suggested that a spike this month could be longer and potentially more deadly than surges in both June and July. Health officials are urging Austinites to continue social distancing, wearing masks, and avoiding gatherings of more than 10 people. Andrew Weber, KUT News.
State lawmakers can start filing bills on Monday, and children's advocacy groups want the state's legislature to adopt priorities that would help children in the state. KUT's Sangeeta Menon explains.
The nonprofit Children at Risk wants state lawmakers to address health, racial disparities, human trafficking, and education as it relates to children. Their policy recommendations include defining and tracking chronic absenteeism to improve student learning and on-time graduation. They also want school districts to have a recess policy to improve student health and all students to have access to broadband internet. Mandy Kimball is the vice president of Children at Risk.
The legislature is going to have to figure out how are they going to continue to financially support the education reforms from HB3. They're also going to have to figure out how can they financially support schools with COVID-related issues and supports.
The Texas Comptroller is warning of a revenue shortfall in the billions of dollars when state lawmakers convene in January. Sangeeta Menon, KUT News.
The pandemic has brought distances between people, literally. That can be hard to overcome. Sometimes it's meant loved ones being sick or even dying, and we're not able to be there. For our Common Ground project, we asked for your true stories of crossing distances with others. Pat Sartor wrote about bridging that distance through song.
COVID conversations with my mother. The Canadian border closes. My mother enters hospice. The separation? As if a large blade came between her and her children in the U.S. where to stay at home. But where is home? Well, it's where the heart is. So how do I get there? I have to deliver my heart through the instrument of voice alone. You know how water seeks its own level? Well, our love for our mother forced its way over the boundary waters. Our mother's doctor called her his poster child for his treatment. Whenever a lump arose, that treatment shrunk it. Every scan afterward showed it worked. Mama, what are you doing? I'm beating David in Scrabble and cribbage. I could see her sharp mind, her deep-set, smiling blue eyes, and hear her baritone voice laughing at her wins. Then in April, I heard my brother's words. Mom's had a setback. The words ran through my veins like a lightning strike. It took only 3 days to go from walking on her own to needing help to stand to bedridden and not being able to finish sentences. It was late April, and her last night in her home before hospice. So what did we do for that night's conversation? Choir night. We sang. John Prine's Grandpa Was a Carpenter, Built Houses, Stores, and Banks. There was applause, smiles, and calls for more. Mama, remember the band? Yes, she replied, clearing her throat. Well, I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. Take a load off, Annie. And you put the load right on me. And then Neil Young, Harvest Moon. Because I'm still in love with you, I want to see you dance again. Because I'm still in love with you on this harvest moon. Ending every call, she'd say, I'll love you all forever. And I'd yell back, forever and ever, amen. Every night, another song list emerged from the landscape of our childhood. Last night in hospice. Remember singing this one to us, Mama? Oh, Shenandoah, I long to hear you. Away, you rolling river. Away, I'm bound to go across the wide Missouri. My brother, the conduit, said, she's smiling and squeezing my hand. Lastly, and singing tearfully, over in Killarney, many years ago, my mother sang a song to me in tones so soft and low. And I'd give the world if I could hear that song of hers today. Flowers and handwritten cards started appearing on the porch. Drive-by deposits of love made us feel closer to our neighbors and co-workers in Austin. I have a deeper connection to all the people separated from their families. Watching them on the news, touching hospital windows instead of their loved ones. Another layer of love was woven, feeling closer to our siblings, lifting each other's spirits while letting go of our mother. The roots of love grow so deep, they transcend border crossings. It's my mother's voice I'll miss the most.
Pat Sartor reading her story for our Common Ground project. Special thanks to the Austin Public Library and the Library Foundation for helping curate the stories in this series. You can find more of them at KUT.org.
Across the world.
Public fridges have been popping up in food insecure neighborhoods in Austin. The Texas Standard's Kristen Cabrera reports.
It's almost lunchtime, and Roy Coronado, his wife Jeanette, and their five-year-old daughter Ariana are outside a taqueria in East Austin. It's closed, but that's okay. The family isn't there for takeout. They came because of the refrigerator outside of the building with the words free food painted on it.
Yeah, we like mainly find a lot of stuff like eggs and milk and potatoes.
This is a part of the ATX Free Fridge Project. The owners of Nixta Taqueria volunteered to host the first fridge open to the public back in August. And Coronado, for one, is grateful.
They didn't only just help my family put food on the table, but other people too. That really, it's a lot to me. It means a lot to me because the struggle is real. The struggle is real.
For those hurting like Coronado, the fridge and the pantry next to it are a lifeline. They act like a giant take-a-penny-leave-a-penny bowl. Local farmers and restaurants drop off produce and bread throughout the week. Neighbors and others also leave what they can. Even Coronado brought food to share.
You know, we had a lot of extra peanut butter and stuff at the house, so I brought them peanut butter.
It's this contagious sense of community camaraderie that first inspired Nixta owner Sarah Martin Biggie and Chef Edgar Rico to participate in the ATX Free Fridge Project. After all, their restaurant was only open 4 months before the pandemic hit. The fact that they're still in business, Martin Biggie says, is because of their community.
From the very beginning, there was sort of this idea of the solidarity. I don't have all the answers. I don't know what the future holds for Nixta. All I know is that people are really down, and seeing just the physical manifestation of something like this free fridge has been really beautiful to see.
Martin Biggie and Rico are both children of immigrants. Rico's parents immigrated from Mexico, and Martin Biggie's parents came from Iran. As entrepreneurs and partners, they've chosen to invest their life here in Austin's East Side.
For us, living in this neighborhood and seeing what we can do to try and combat some of those things like food insecurity, we're a restaurant, how do we use our resources? How do we use our collective community?
East Austin, though highly gentrified, is still home to many minority low-income families, groups that are most likely to be food insecure during and before the pandemic, says Patrick Stover.
Blacks and Hispanics had much higher rates of food insecurity than whites.
Stover is the vice chancellor and dean at Texas A&M University College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Because the pandemic reduced food access for many, community-supported fridges have been popping up all over Texas. Stover says across these households are the most vulnerable.
What we see in Texas, which is a real tragedy, is that children are feeling this the most. So not only do we see, again, the disparity amongst our underrepresented groups, we see that households with children faced even more severe consequences with the economic downturn leading to food insecurity.
Outside Nixta Taqueria, Coronado's daughter Ariana helps her parents choose from the fridge.
Oh, did you find something? What's that?
Ground meat.
Oh, ground meat.
Jeanette is on the phone with Coronado's mother.
Do you need some chili powder?
Direct chili powder?
Yeah.
The family missed the most recent food bank pickup because Coronado was in the hospital. So the fridge adds just a bit more stability and peace of mind to the family's next meal, Jeanette says.
I appreciate their help because there's some times where we run low on food and we don't have the money to go get it and we can come here.
Inside Nixta's kitchen, Chef Rico prepares one of their signature dishes. The Taqueria was named one of Food & Wine's best new restaurants of the year, a title that holds a different weight in a pandemic.
In these times of, you know, there's millions of people without jobs, to see that something so small like this, in which all it really takes is a little bit of electricity on our part, and, you know, it makes sense.
The colorful dining room hasn't been open to customers for about 7 months now. On a little windowsill is a tiny ofrenda with a picture of baby Rico and his grandmother cooking in the kitchen. It's a reminder that food brings us together, especially in hard times. For the Texas Standard, I'm Kristen Cabrera.
Thank you.
That's KUT Weekend for the first full weekend of November 2020. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org. Email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org. Or just ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. And then,